is how legends are made.
Legendary. There's so many legends in this building today.
Legendary. Hi, I'm Kevin Jonas Sr., and you're listening to The Legendary I Lived It podcast. Today's guest is CeCe Winans, one of the most decorated and awarded gospel singers of all time. I've known her music since I was a teenager, and today you're in for a treat. CeCe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Honored to be here and great to meet you face to face.
Well, we're both part of singing and musical families. My grandfather, before he died, was wearing a Jonas Brothers t-shirt.
Aww.
And he gave it to the nurse that took care of him, and he told me right before he died, he said, you do know that my brothers and I, we were the first Jonas Brothers that sang. And they had a little band. But your family, oh, is unbelievably musical. And I would love to know what it was like to grow up in the premier family of gospel music in a home filled with that incredible voices, incredible songs.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'm sure you already know when you grow up in a musical family, it's always a lot of, we'll call it music now, but I'm sure it was a lot of noise back then. My mom and dad both sang. They actually met in a gospel choir. My mom was about 15. I think my dad was 17. Amazing. And they both sang. They had incredible voices. My dad has gone on to be with the Lord now. Mm-hmm. But, and yeah, we all sang. We all grew up in church. You know, they had seven boys straight. And I was the first girl to have two younger sisters. And so they were singing before I came along, you know.
I understand that too. I tried for a girl four times and I gave up.
You quit.
I quit too early.
My mother told me, you know, back then they didn't have the ultrasound. So when the doctor said it's a girl, she said, "What? It's a what?"
I bet.
And then I guess if they would have kept going, it would have been all girls, but they stopped at 10. I have two younger sisters.
Amazing.
But yeah, so that's all I remember, Kevin, is singing in church. You know, my first solo, I was probably about 8 years old. Growing up, we had a little piano. None of us really took lessons. I don't play at all, but most of my siblings played by ear. Mm-hmm. And so my parents, you know, in our home, we could only listen to gospel music. We couldn't listen to anything else.
Same.
So, you know, we were in Detroit, in Motown City, during that time, Motown sounds. And so we heard the Stevie Wonders and the Gladys Knights. But it wasn't in the home, you know, on the radio, going to the corner store in school,
right.
On the television, you know, back then they had a lot of music shows. But it was awesome. You know, our parents saw something in us that we didn't even see in ourselves. And, you know, and I know you understand that. And so they stood behind us. We started out doing family concerts in Detroit at Mother's Day and Christmas time. And then my brother started recording.
And they didn't just start recording. Yeah, they became the premier vocal group of gospel music.
Well, thanks to Andre Crouch. You know Andre Crouch, the person we loved. And yes, his music just took gospel to another whole level, and he heard about the Winans in Detroit, and came to our house and heard them sing, and he was the reason why they got signed to Light Records. So he introduced the Winans to the world.
Wow, when he passed away, you know, we've lost a lot of greats. When he passed away, my wife was worried about me. Because for about a week, I was mourning. I never met him, but his impact. My tribute is my favorite song ever, the greatest, but also like, you don't have to jump no pews. Like, all of it. And it was, I was raised in like a Southern kind of charismatic church, Foursquare, if you know Foursquare, and you know, good, solid people.
Mm-hmm.
But gospel music got in my soul, and was a big part, and worship music. And I grew up where, like you, it's the only music you could listen to, and then I would sneak a listen to the things from like Hotel California.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was intrigued and scared all at the same time as a young kid in that environment. Well, what was that first song that you sang? Do you remember?
My first song that I can remember as far as a solo was Fill My Cup, Lord. What's the name of it?
Fill My Cup, Lord. That
yes,
one?
Yes, I lift it up, Lord. Come and quench
this thirsting of my soul. Yeah, beautiful.
That's it. And they, you know, it was back then, of course, you remember this too, where parents didn't ask you what you wanted to do. They were like, you're singing this
do
song.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to sing it. So I probably sang through half of it and cried through the other half. But that was the beginning of me singing, and it was a convocation, they called it. Every year they would have something. And so I kind of started singing that song every year, you know, and something happened during those young years that I realized it was something that I was called to do, mm-hmm. that God was actually anointing me to do, even though I didn't really understand what that meant at the time. And so, yeah, that was my first solo.
Oh. Mine was, For He Is Lord.
Oh, He is Lord. I love
it. Oh, I didn't sing it like you, but I sang it.
So how old were you when you did your first solo?
Seven. I went to a church camp and came back with the hot new chorus, the hot new worship song, and it was For He Is Lord. But the Andre Crouch songs, that season, everything about that was great.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, growing up in church, that was everything. And then I started kind of getting away from church music for a while. And a friend of mine was murdered. And that actually brought me back to the Lord. And I had a real life change. And during that time, I was a little lost because I was really focused on music and the Lord. And there was a place close by that you could go and pray in a replica of the upper room.
Mm-hmm.
You could go skating with other teenagers from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And it was a place for me that became important. And one of my all-time favorite memories was after skating, and I, of course, as much as I wanted to be a good follower of the Lord, I also loved that there were beautiful young ladies there from skating from all over the world. And once I finished trying to make some moves, I went over and we heard that the lead singers of this organization, it was their last night, and you guys, it was you and your brother. And I walked in, and they said, hey, does anybody want to answer the phones tonight? Because they're ringing off the hook. And I don't care. I'll talk to people. But I was really there to hear two people, BB and CC Winans. And it's a huge fan. Love will lift us. Lord, lift us up.
Lord, lift us up, right? Love lift us up.
Rocked my world. Your version of the classic song.
Yeah.
Big smash out of, coming from, you know, not a traditional record company. It was sheer impact of your voice. And so thank you for that gift to me, because it was in a season where I was really trying to find myself and helped carry me through.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. That is really awesome. You know, yeah, that's pretty amazing. You just never know the lives that you touch or affect, you know, and that's one of my, I don't know, I'm so honored to be able to sing gospel music and understand the power of the gospel,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah, it's pretty amazing to hear those testimonies, and just to hear yours today, I'm like, wow.
Well, my kids grew up, part of what I want to do with this podcast is my kids grew up, and if you listen to their music, the influences are diverse.
Yeah, very.
And there's a version of Nick's song Jealous, which was his big solo smash, Still Get Jealous, that he did with a black gospel choir. And I was like, it all comes around. The stuff they grow up on, you know, they grow up with it. It makes it in there, and then it just comes pouring out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you said even by Andre Crouch, you know, so many people influenced us, but he was definitely the greatest influence in our music, shaping us before we knew him. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, after we met him, because it was actually his musical director, Howard McQuarrie was his name. Years ago,
I know the name.
Who went to PTL to Charlotte to be the musical director,
and which explains how you ended up there.
Right, he told them. He said, "They said we need a couple of kids to sing." He said, "Well, I know the Winers have some younger siblings that might be a good fit, you know." And BB and I came down and auditioned, and that's how we ended up at PTL.
You were young.
We hadn't heard any. We never knew Jim and Tammy. We had never heard of the ministry. And went down there, and yeah, and it was Tammy who gave us that song to lead, because before that, even though we did family concerts, BB and I never sang as a duet.
Really?
Right. So they gave us that song, and a lot of churches were watching, and they started calling, you know, can we have the two colored kids come to our church? And sing for us. And we were like, well, we don't sing together. And so we started taking the cassette tapes at the time, you know, Amy Grant stuff and different things we would like. And we're like, okay, you do this part, I'll do this part. And that's how we...
Oh, well, they used to have accompaniment tracks.
That's right.
And you could take the actual track that Amy sang with.
That's right. That was awesome.
Oh,
you carry that band with you all the time.
I did. I had a little folder for myself that I would take into churches and do this one first, then this one. I'll give you band in a box. So how did it end up? Because you left, and I happened to be there that night, which was, by the way, incredibly emotional, because it was the end of an era. You know, you guys had real impact. It wasn't just one song.
Yeah,
became...
Well, we had a good time. They became our family. It was an awesome start. It was something that God was doing that we weren't fully aware of what He was doing. Mm-hmm. And actually, I just told you that I just celebrated my 36th anniversary, which is, wow, I can't believe it's been 36 years. But I left because I was getting engaged to my husband and I was going back to Detroit. And Jim was not too happy about that.
Well, it worked out.
but we loved them dearly, still have great friends from that time, still in our lives, but went back to Detroit and BB and I started recording as a duet, but it was because of PTL. And so that's how we got started.
What a start. I mean, out of the gate, it was just massive. And I specifically remember Keith Thomas and some of his, that's when I remember he went from like producing instrumental stuff to like,
right. You're
the
right.
Breakthrough, right?
You're so right, Kevin. BB met Keith. I didn't know about Keith, but BB met Keith, and they started talking and collaborating. And Keith was kind of instrumental in taking us to Sparrow Records at the time. And we went to Sparrow, and Keith and BB really produced. They really formed and shaped BB and CeCe, the sound, the lyrics, the contemporary feel, all of that. And so that was a major door that opened for us. But then they were connected to, as you know, EMI. Right. And so Capitol Records was kind of their mainstream arm. And so they heard our song, Heaven. And was it Heaven the first one or I Owe You Me? Could have been I Owe You, but they heard our first.
Heaven is the first one I remember. Boom, 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 boom. So good.
And so they like, hey, look, can we sign these kids? We want to sign them just like they are. They don't have to change anything. And so that just gave us the exposure of having a Christian label and a mainstream label.
And that didn't happen before.
not that I know of.
Before the majors, you know, I know you guys were able to do I'll Take You There. And that combination of one of the gospel greats, but mixed with your contemporary music just kind of flipped my whole world upside down.
Wow.
So good.
Well, you know what? It was strange to us, like people like yourself who hadn't really experienced gospel music with that feel of the contemporary. And I think going back to our upbringing where all we could listen to gospel music, we kind of fell in love with all of it. You know, we heard the Shirley Caesar, you know, the real gospel feel. We heard the Rance Allen. I don't know if you've heard of him before. Incredible vocalist, but his stuff was always very contemporary. And then we had the Andre Crouch and the Hawkins and a second chapter of Acts, you know, Amy Grant. I mean,
that is a mix. And that's how I lived. That's how I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
It was a melting pot of music that was moving through the church.
Amazing. So
you were in Charlotte. Did you know a pastor there, Don DeGreat?
Yes.
I used to sneak into his church as a teenager and just go nuts.
I have to tell you about the first time I went to his church, I was totally scared.
I can believe it. It was crazy.
Now, you know, their sons were a part of what's the name of their group? Their group got really big.
Oh, I
R&B
don't.
R&B group. Maybe I'll think of it beforehand.
Oh, please. Yeah, or let's make sure I know, because
it was a real big group. But anyway, Don DeGreat. So I had never heard of Don DeGreat. So when we came to Charlotte, my brother, Marvin, who's still in Detroit, he said, Don DeGreat is down there, because he had a gospel show at the time.
That's right.
I don't know if it was Right On, but it was some type of gospel show. And again, I wasn't familiar with it. So Marvin said, well, no, he's down there. And so I was like, really? He said, yeah, you should check this church out. So actually my brother was coming down to speak at that church. And so we went to check it out, and we went with one of our friends, Daryl, a white friend of ours, right? This is a black church, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I grew up in Pentecostal church, so I'm used to dancing, shouting, organ, all of that. But this church was on another level.
I went in with my friend Frankie. I named my son after him, my youngest son.
Really?
And we were the only white kids there.
Uh-huh.
And just like, we have found heaven on earth. I mean, it was insane. But when they went into, you don't have to jump no pews.
Yes.
They were jumping pews.
It's so funny you said it, because my friend, we went, and Bibi and I went, and they went to jumping and doing flips and doing everything, right? and I said, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. And so our friend Daryl said, wait a minute, y'all never seen anything like this? He said, if y'all haven't seen anything, then we're getting out of here.
Yeah, this is a little more than we're used to. Oh, that is so, I've never even spoken to anybody that remembered or knew who he was.
But it was an impact.
That's so funny.
Yeah, they're great people, but great music for sure. Oh, great singer.
What a great. I was in the line marching around that church with the people in that church, and all I could think was, this is the best collection of vocals and musicians playing just what we'd say in
just
the spirit.
You're right.
Unbelievable.
You're gonna get the best when you're part of that. Wow, okay.
Amazing. Amazing.
Our path crossed more than what I thought.
Well, we were close.
That's pretty awesome.
Never met in person, but
truly
amazing. So now you're breaking, not just in Christian music, but the two of you are experiencing astronomical success. Like it's breaking out. And for the people like me that kind of lived in that, I want to write songs that do both.
Mm-hmm.
And had the luxury and blessing of doing that with my kids. But I wanted to see music that had a spiritual underpinning, but could reach a larger audience. And you guys were living it. So I know there was some criticism for people that did that, the Amy yeah. Grants, Michael W. Smiths, yourselves. I was celebrating from a distance, like, yes, mm-hmm. CeCe, you go get you. It.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, of course it was criticism. And again, that was something that was foreign to us, because to us, we were just doing what we grew up on, you know. You had some traditional lyrics, or you had lyrics that said Jesus, you had lyrics that said I love you, you had lyrics that said, you know, peace, you mm-hmm. know, all of that was gospel to us, you know.
Yeah.
And so when we came out and we started getting some criticism, like you said, the majority was always encouragement. But we just had to understand that everybody didn't see gospel music that way. They saw it with a pipe organ and singing just the hymns, and that was it, and felt like you were a sellout if you weren't doing it like that. And so you don't get angry with people, you have to respect their opinion. Mm-hmm. But us understanding who we were, whose we were, and our purpose, we just had to stay focused on that. And it was just an amazing experience to go into arenas that you really didn't even pray for, you know. It was just, this is what we do, and doors were opening, and we were able to go and be who we were. And then we realized, wow, God, you're allowing us to be used outside of the church. You're allowing us to meet people who really need to know who you are, you know. And so that was pretty awesome.
Oh, I now know what that feels like through my kids,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And seeing them succeed, and occasionally hearing a song that I help them with,
yeah,
out there,
yeah,
and touching people. You know, I realized something pretty quickly. I had pastored, and I had a handful of people during my pastorate that would say, you know, I didn't commit suicide because of some message, but it was 3-4 people. But when my kids blew up and all these comments were coming, social media gives it to you in real time. Thousands a day were saying, you saved my life. And
isn't that awesome?
So I'm still the guy that just looks up at my kids and looks around at their crowd and looks up at my kids and looks back around, and I just
weep.
Cry.
Yeah, weep. You just weep. You're right. You're right.
But I do that with you, and I don't even know you until today, personally. But yeah. I'll look. You know, I've lived with my antennas, you mm-hmm. know, in managing mm-hmm. talent, and
yeah,
boy, I knew right away you were truly a special gift to the church and to the world.
Praise God. I mean, I just love to hear what you say. You know, you look at your kids, and also you see where God will take your humble beginnings. And I remember the first letter I got like that, and saying that I was contemplating suicide, but I heard your voice on the radio and I decided to give life another try. You know, when you're out there and you're 17 years old, you just, all of a sudden you realize, whoa, this is really heavy. You know, it really is power in the gospel, but also comes an awesome responsibility, mm-hmm. you know? And so I was always determined not to get that twisted, not to ever forget that every platform was not about me, but it was about what God wanted to do. But to be able to, like you said, look at your kids and begin to weep, because my kids, I mean, we started pastoring a church about 8 years ago. It's called Nashville Life. And it was something that my husband and I just could not believe God was asking us to do at this stage of our lives. But it was birthed out through my son. My son, who's an amazing writer and singer and all of that, was so into doing music. He graduated from Belmont, and he just got to a point of life. He was like, I want to get away. So he went to Australia, and God met him in a really small church there and just turned his life upside down in an awesome way. And he came back to Nashville, and he said that he wanted his friends to experience what he had experienced. And so he started getting his friends saved and filled with the Holy Spirit, and asked if they could come over to the house for a Bible study that we did. And a lot of them got filled with the Spirit, and all of his friends were, a lot of them were for Belmont. They had just graduated like from Belmont. Mm-hmm. And so millennials. And so it started out a very diverse church and just in talented young people all over. And then I'm seeing my son there just teach and worship God. And I just sat there and I just wept. I just said, Lord, he's faithful to every generation, you know? Yeah. And so I'm a grateful mom. I only have two children, Alvin and Ash. I call them Alpha and Omega. And, but they're awesome. They're sold out for God. And so that's, so God can just, he can reach people and he can make disciples in so many different ways.
Oh, that's so, so beautiful. You know, those sacrifices we have with our kids, you know, my kids started on Broadway and Nick, even when he was young, he would say, Dad, let's write a song on the way to a Broadway show and then driving back to New Jersey on the way back home. Fast forward, he signed a solo deal at 11, then the group started and it went on from there. He was honored with the Hal David at the Songwriters Induction for the Hall of Fame. He was honored with the Hal David Award for the up-and-coming songwriters. He gave me the award.
Aww.
It sits behind me in my house because it was given to him in New York in the same theater where he was in Annie Get Your Gun, where we would write all the way there and back.
Yeah.
And those things we impart to our children, you know, that we give them. And to be honest, I wanted to listen to talk radio, right? anything but just every day writing a new song. But it was, he got signed because of one of those songs. It started the journey.
Yeah.
But he stood up there and it was like, Dad, this is yours.
It's yours. Aww.
And I just steward it. It's his. But you know, I know what it is to be a parent. I know your parents must have felt such incredible joy.
Praise God.
Watching their kids. As a musical person and my kids, I didn't get jealous. I never did what I did because I wanted to live my dreams through my kids. I love them flying at higher levels.
Yes, me too. Yes. Every parent does. And like you said, my parents, when they started us doing like concerts in Detroit, local concerts, you know, they would sit back and say, I just wonder if anybody's going to come and see our kids, you know. And then when they saw all the success that God was giving us, you know, they just always reminded us, just remember who you are and where you come from, you know. And why you do what you do, you know, and but to see them, you know, smile and be so godly proud, there's no greater, you know, reward, you know.
No greater reward. And you, it's being passed, you know, mom and pop Winans, they didn't just sing, they sang. Like, to impart it and it go to you and your siblings, and now to the generation that follows.
Now to the next generation, right?
That's the way it should be, and we celebrate it.
Amen. Awesome. Awesome.
Well, then, look, that incredible run with your brother.
Uh-huh.
Most people, that would have been enough. But you then went on to just a crazy run that brought you side by side with, well, the most Grammy award-winning gospel singer. You know, I was talking to Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the fact that, you know, one Dove Award is a lifetime ambition.
Oh, he has what, 2,000?
Oh, I know, like 59. 59. And 12 Grammys is outrageous. That, like, the highest pinnacle of music. My kids have been nominated twice.
Okay.
And they didn't win. And their first one, they lost to Adele. So if you're going to lose,
lose to Adele.
But 12 Grammys in gospel. And obviously, you're as humble as anyone I've ever spoken to, which is what I'm seeing with the people I call legends. But what was it like then? Because the shift... You really went to gospel and worship.
Yeah, I went more. Yeah,
you went
even were more contemporary, and then my, well, you know, a lot of people don't know, that when BB and I signed to do a record deal, we signed to do solo projects. And so we kind of just fulfilled everything that was happening with the duet. And then it was time for us to do some solo things. And it's so funny because you do all of those interviews all those years talking about being brothers and sister. And when we started doing solo things, we started getting mail and concern. People were like, oh no, they got a divorce. And I'm like, what? After a million interviews, you think we're married?
That is really funny.
But for me, it was scary for me because even though we had did, like I said, we had never planned to be a duet before going to PTL. So we grew up singing solos and within the family doing different things. But when I went in, I just realized this would be the first time on this scale that the world would hear me by myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be who I was. And worship music is my favorite thing to sing. I mean, I love all the different styles of music, but I just love just simple worship songs. And so that's what Alone in His Presence was, you know? I just went in and found kind of just carved out who I know I was and what God had called me to do as an individual. And it was a blessing because again, even before it came out, I always sent it to my pastors to kind of pray and listen to what I was doing. And they had put something of a part of it on one of the answering services or something of Alone in His Presence. And so I remember them sharing with me that somebody, and this was before I released it, somebody had called and it was in an uproar, just going through a whole lot of trouble, and they put them on hold. And when they came back, the person said, who is that singing? Because I just know everything is going to be all right, you know? And so God had already used it before we put it out, you know? And
that's
so
awesome.
I just, the testimonies from that, from what I've done as a solo artist, it's just been, I don't know, overwhelming. It's very humbling to just do what God has given you. And it can be such a very simple offering, but when you give it to Him, how He can use it to bring life, you know, to bring joy, to bring encouragement, to uplift people, to bring answers, you know. It's been an amazing ride to see what God will do with one yes.
And it was a wonderful hybrid because it was worship music. You know, there was a period of time that I was doing worship stuff, independent, and I was knocking on every door. You know, Music Row in Nashville used to be houses, and you would knock on the record company or publishing company houses. I knocked on every door, and the Christian company said, well, worship has no place in radio and Christian company. That's for the church, not for commerce. And I think you're missing the point. And you brought a combination, that voice that does its work, you know, every good and perfect gift comes from above. But also you brought worship into the mainstream before some of the others that are well known for it in Christian music. You brought it, but with gospel underpinnings, and it was powerful from day one. And, of course, Alabaster Box. What a gift that song, your version of that song.
Everybody's version of that song. It's just a powerful song. Somebody gave that to me, and I held that song for almost a year and a half, maybe 2 years. I knew I wanted to do it, but I just knew it had to be the right time and the right album and all of that. And but when I first heard that song, it was a young lady singing it with just a piano. And I just got in my bunk because I was on tour when I want to say John Cruz. Remember the Cruz family?
Oh, of course.
From Dallas. Yeah. John Cruz is the one that introduced that song to me.
Wow.
And he said, CeCe, you got to hear the song. You got to do the song. I was like, okay. You know, you get a lot of those. And but I got in the bunk and I listened to it and I just wept. I was just like, I don't think I'll be able to sing this song without
crying. Nobody sings that song better than you. That that was the perfect combination for sure.
Thank you. But that song is such a powerful song. And I think it hits, you know, it's funny because I can sing it anywhere at any time. You know, I've sang it I don't know how many times by now over the years. But my husband, it's like every time I sing it, it's like he is done. You know, and it's just amazing how the power and the anointing of that song. It's like you're hearing it for the first time every time. But yeah. Jesus told us that we will remember her.
That's right.
You know, and to be able to sing that. And I think every worshiper, you're a worshiper. So I think it just hits every worshiper right there. You know,
yeah, it does.
Because no one knows the cost, you know, and also understanding the importance of giving God your all and what he does in return is just unmatchable, you know. So yeah, alone, Alabaster Box.
You know, there was a song, one of yours that's a favorite of mine, but I was re-listening to it. He's Never Failed Me Yet. You can't sing that unless you've lived some life. And, you know, it's a phrase we've all heard. He's never failed me yet. But I was listening back to it thinking, this is coming from the heart of a person who's seen it all.
And again, going back to our kids, you know, that particular, which was my last studio record, I did a Christmas record recently, but my last record called Let Them Fall in Love, that has He's Never Failed Me Yet on there. My son wrote that song.
Oh.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And I just remember he wrote and produced that whole record. And I was blessed to win 2 Grammys by it. And actually it was a record that I actually sat down and let him tell me what to do. You know, that's had to be the most humbling experience.
Well, our kids love that.
Yes, they love it. It's like, Mom, I know your voice. I know what you need to do. You're going to do this. And then for him to tell you, no, that was good, but not good enough. I'm like, what?
What?
I
you
was
don't push
singing
me like
before
that.
You were thought of.
That's
But I was so proud of him, but just godly proud. When I listened to the lyrics of that song, it was my heart. It was who I am and what I stand for and what I believe and what I'm grateful for. But to hear it come from your son, mm-hmm. again, it was just, Lord, I thank you. Because as a mom, you want your kids to be successful, you want to be blessed, but you understand that there's only one good success, and that is falling in love with Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
That's really it, and that's what I pray for, knowing that everything else will fall in line if you get that right. So
that's right.
To hear those lyrics, I just wept. I just wept in the studio, and I was, you know, I would get home and listen to what I did in the studio and hear the lyrics again, not just of that one, but all the songs that I sang on that record. Most of them he wrote, and I was just blessed by what God had did in his heart, you know?
You also ended up in front of audiences big and small, but connected to some of the greatest talent in the world. The Oprahs, but Whitney Houston. The combination of your voice together, you know, if anybody said to me, you're going to sing a duet with Whitney, you'd have trouble finding me. I'd be gone somewhere hiding. But you are there, and it's perfection. And you guys were close. And how was that as an experience and walking through all that we've walked through?
Well, we met Whitney when she first came out. It was at an Image Awards. And BB and I were singing, but that was the year she came out. You know, it was all about Whitney. Everything was about Whitney. And when I heard her for the first time, well, for the first time, it really wasn't the first time. When I heard her and she came out, I don't know if it was Dance With Somebody, but one of the songs, and, you know, her voice was just like no other. I was like, I heard this voice before, but I couldn't. I was like, where did I hear this voice? And I remember a commercial. It was a restaurant in Michigan called Steak and Ale. And and it was a commercial, and she sang on a commercial. So I just remembered that voice. I was like, because I remember hearing that commercial, and I was like, who is that singing that But, you know, it's a commercial, so you kind of forget, you keep going. And so we met her at the Image Awards that night, and she looked at us, she saw us in the lobby, and she was like, BB and Cece. And we were like, yes, how do you know that? And she started singing our stuff right there. You know, wow. I don't know if it was Heaven. She was singing something. And we were like, what? She said, oh, no, I love you guys' stuff. I love all the wine and stuff, everything. And so she asked us that night, she said, are you guys singing? Because we were, the Image Awards, I think, was in California. Yeah, it was in California. And she said, are you guys singing around anytime? We were like, actually, we had a show that night, this place called Concert by the Sea. It was a very small place that a lot of different artists would go to and sing. And so we, and she showed up that night. She said, I'm coming. And we were like, yeah, right. Sure, you're coming. And to make a long story short, she came, ended up on stage with us, singing our songs better than we could have ever sang them in life. I was like, it's time for you to get off the stage now, ma'am. But we had a blast, and that's where our friendship started. And so that was years and years. I want to say my oldest son, who is now 35, I think Alvin was maybe about maybe five, if that long, if that old. I don't even know if he was that old. He could have been 2.5, something like that. And because I didn't have my second daughter. So yeah, Alvin was probably about 2. And so Whitney has been a dear friend and sister of mine for a long time, and didn't find out until years later that she, you know, was on drugs, you know, had that lifestyle. It was like a different lifestyle that I knew nothing about. Because even though we were friends, it's not like I saw her every day all the time. She would come in and visit sometimes, and then she would come to church with me, you know, and then she would do that life. You know, that life was, it was a life. You know, seeing somebody that successful in the world's eyes, it's a rough life.
It's,
you know,
rough. Yeah.
And when I realized the life it was, I was really kind of, I was very excited about the level of fame that I had. Very satisfied and gratitude. It was like, oh, you can have that. I mean, it's just.
No, the pressures are unbelievable. And there's only been a few people, for those that are young listening that know of Whitney, it really would be hard to describe
how
like a cannon she shot out, and it was just an
arrival. Yeah, it was huge, right. Went to bigger than life.
Yeah.
You know, and so but when I recognized and was and understood the issues that she was dealing with, we fought hard, you know. Fought hard to make sure she got well. But again, even going to the life and the demands of the life, you know, the industry is an industry that can really kill you if you don't have that foundation that we're talking about and have the right people around you. It's not a place that anybody with issues can survive without the right help.
My wife spoke at a women's gathering in this small town I grew up in. We moved back to open a restaurant, and she was sharing with them, and they asked that I get up and say something, and I said, well, first of all, I want to apologize if I dated any of you when I was young. Forgive me now. and I said, you know, I was a good kid, but I wasn't perfect in this town. Mm-hmm. But I also didn't have TMZ chasing me down the street like my kids have had. And living your high school years and college years
on
the cover of magazines, and every relationship, real or not, is being scrutinized. It is a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say to my wife, you know, there's a thin line between crazy and genius. And our part of our job is to, you know, just lean them the right direction,
mm-hmm.
and be as stable as it's possible in this flesh.
That's right.
To help them there. But it is hard for those of us that love people,
mm-hmm.
and want to see them healthy.
Yeah.
Because she deserved it. I saw her perform at right towards the end at Clive Davis. You know, he was bringing her back.
You're right.
And
you're right. It was bad.
It was not.
You know, even then, it wasn't her, and she didn't have a voice, but yet people wanted her to tour anyway. It was heartbreaking, you know, and that, you know, she came and stayed with me for a while when she was really doing bad, and I was so glad she was here. We had a great time. Again, she would get revived and begin to get healthy, and then they would pull her out again. And I talked to her that week, the week that she passed. I called her, just check on her. I said, "Hey, sis, how you doing?" She says, I'm good. You know, I'm going to do this Clive Davis thing. I'm about to fly. I was like, "You sure you're good?" Because she was kind of heavy on my heart. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Yeah, I'm good." I was like, "Okay, all right, just checking on you." And unfortunately, that happened.
I was there. Were you there that night? Oh.
No, I wasn't.
We were all
there.
So excited, of course.
You were there for Clive thing.
Oh, yeah. And when she started singing, it broke my heart because she was struggling. And
yeah, her voice was gone for a few years, you know. And yeah, just because she was just so ill. She was so ill, but yet trying to still do it. But then the year that she passed, she was going to perform for Clive again, or she was going to the party, and because it was in February. And I got a call from my daughter who's, you know, crying, "Mom, I just heard Whitney passed." You know, I was like, "That can't be true. I just talked to her. You know, no, she's fine." And so I called her assistant, and sure enough, I could tell in her voice she didn't want to tell me over the phone. And I said, I have one question. And I just asked her, I said, "Is Whitney alive?" And she said, "No," you know, and I just kind of like lost that. I was out at a restaurant at the time, and rough. Still can't believe it. And then after that, Bobby Chris, but she was already ill at the time as well. So it was just sad to see. But I just want people to know that she was one of the sweetest people I ever met. Incredible talent, and had a big heart. She had a huge, huge heart.
Time does that for us. It allows us to forget some of the painful things about a loss.
Yeah.
And you can't think of Whitney or Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Or others that have passed through my life.
That have passed through, right.
And have anything but joy from the journey. And that's a gift that I think the Lord allows for us.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't break us, and it doesn't kill us. Well, what's coming up for you?
A live CD of worship music that's already out there, music that I love. So doing some remakes, kind of what Michael W. Smith just did a few years ago.
Yep.
That I was a part of. So being managed by Chaz and Greg now, they wanted me to try that. And I was like, "Oh, I think I would love that." So doing some fun stuff. I just did the song Never Lost that Elevation wrote. It's called Never Lost.
Right here in Charlotte.
Yeah,
they're here in Charlotte.
That's right. Right. They do some great stuff, but I wasn't really familiar with this particular song. And somebody brought it to my attention. I think it was my son, Alvin. And I heard it. I was like, "Oh,
powerful,
really
song.
Good." It kind of sounds like a Fred Hammond type song to me, too. So I did that one and a couple of other good songs. And so we're doing that. But, you know, I'm very busy with the church. You know, Nashville Life Church keeps me busy. We're winning souls, making disciples, walking through life with incredible people. And it's pretty rewarding. I'm enjoying this part of ministry. It's nonstop, great. But it's what God created us to do, you know, to lay down our lives for others.
CC, thank you.
You got it. You're welcome. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you, too. I can't wait to really meet you in person.
That's right. Hey, God bless you. You got it, brother. Love you.
God bless. Love you. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to the legendary I Lived It podcast. Take some time and rate our show, and we look forward to having you back again.